welcome to Broken But Glorious. I'm Chris Lapp, and I'm joined by Ultimo Oliver Newman.
Yeah, I like that one, Chris. That's pretty good. Yeah.
Unfortunately, no Nick this week. He's not well, so hopefully get well soon, Nick. He was going to be Tiger Mask Davey in my intro.
Oh, man. Okay. I still take Ultimo for that, I think. I was a huge Dragon fan. Mm. Brilliant wrestler.
So how are you doing this evening, Ali?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, Chris. How about yourself?
Good. A bit tired. A bit bored in work, so I don't...
It's the
lull before the storm type thing.
Yeah, I was lagging last night when I was doing Positive in Pro Wrestling episode 2. Mm. Hope the listeners enjoyed it. I don't know if it was my best work, but I think I put that down to tiredness.
I've just listened to it on the dog's walk.
What do you think?
That was good.
Oh, okay. Well, as long as you enjoyed it and the readers, the readers, that's me, the writer there, the listeners enjoyed it, then it's all good.
All right, so we've done loads, or seems like we've done loads of interviews since the Rumble review. Do you want to quickly discuss your one with Steve Valentino?
Yeah, Steve Valentino and me go way back to Anti-Watershed Wrestling, Alternative Wrestling World in 2006-07, when he was a part of the crowd and I was part of the crowd, writing. And we had a chat about how he found wrestling in the first place. He saw Sting when he lives in the UK, so we kind of surmised that it might have been a dream, which is quite funny. His inspiration was Rockstar Spud, which is Drake Maverick in the WWE, now the GM of 205 Live.
Yeah, we'll discuss that in a minute.
Yeah, exactly. And his dream, like daydream, of wrestling AJ Styles at NWA Hammerlock training camp, because he thought that he would be involved in it.
Yeah.
And then being plucked out of the SmackDown Live crowd to wrestle AJ Styles. And then I laughed and joked with him because he's in really good physical shape. I said, like, beast. Mm. And then if he was going to have a match in WWE, it would be him against Brock Lesnar, beast versus beast. And it's a fun listen. It goes an hour and 18 minutes when we were given half an hour. So you can tell that the interviewer, myself, and the interviewee, Steve Valentino, really enjoyed the interview, and we carried it on for as long as we could. And it's probably, with no disrespect meant to any of the other interviewees, but I think it's the best interview in the short history of Broken But Glorious Wrestling podcast.
I've listened to it twice and I've really enjoyed it. I did three interviews with three of the rising stars of the British scene. I did JJ Barker, Billy Norton, and Joe Nelson. They all discussed how they got into wrestling, some of their biggest matches so far, and some of their dream matches for the future. I thought they were all 17, and they're all their favourite wrestler growing up was Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, it was fascinating though, to be honest, Chris. I know they're all in their infancy career wise, but it's once again when we were talking off air about the length of shows and interviews and stuff. If you can get somebody hooked and out and in like 15 minutes, they're going to listen to it in the droves.
Mm.
So your interviews with JJ Barker, with Joe Nelson and Billy Norton, probably will be some of the best interviews listener-wise, when it's all said and done with Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast. So, great job.
Yeah, I think the Joe Nelson one's just past 700 listens, so thank you for everyone who's listened.
That's
to
incredible.
That.
Yeah. Really is.
Right, have you been to any shows since our last review?
Yeah, I went to Pro Wrestling Subjective on Sunday. The show was called No Fun Now.
Oh, I want to see Damien Dunn live. I've never seen him live.
Yeah, I have to say it that way, otherwise Steve Valentino will give me abuse. So hopefully I've nailed it this time, Steve. And yeah, just quickly going through the results of the show, because I talked about the positive elements of the show on the Positive in Pro Wrestling episode 2, which was recorded last night and is available on the Broken But Glorious Wrestling podcast Twitter page, and it's available on my page as well, twitter.com/RummyR. So Pro Wrestling Subjective, the first match was Harry Cruz versus Disciple with Judge. I was impressed with Cruz's technical ability and his strength. Disciple's no nonsense, so he's always fun to watch for me, being like a technical wrestling fan. Judge and the Cruz picks up the win. Judge and Disciple attack afterwards, so that feud seems to have just got started, really. The next match was the Hunter Brothers, Lee and Jim, friends of the show, I'm sure, and the usual suspects, who are a team that's picking up steam in the Midlands wrestling scene, and, you know, this is their debut on Pro Wrestling's Objective. And they were impressive, and the Hunters, you know, they just go to show why they're one of the best teams in Europe. They've been together, obviously, as a tag team for a long time, but they are so seamless in the ring. The usual suspects won this one. It was a low blow by Nate, and the suspects were able to pick up the win, which is a huge win against a very good team. And it'll be interesting to see. That's probably the start of that feud as well, in all honesty, because of the low blow. The third match was the captain, Steve Valentino, versus Elliot Jordan Experience. This was back and forth. Either man could win it. And then, you know, either this is by design or a mistake, I'm not quite sure, because I didn't get to ask the question after the show. But Valentino won, and his foot was on the rope.
Mm.
And obviously, being a hero to the fans, this is a very shady move. So I'm not sure what that means for Steve Valentino and Elliot Jordan, but they had talked on the Steve Valentino interview about how he would clash with each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is if this is the first chapter of the book, then it was, you know, it was a good match to get it started. Advertised Sean O'Shea was not on the show, so it was Athena Fury versus Barbie Rogue to become the first ever Pro Wrestling's Objective Women's Champion. There's a mysterious woman interjects, and she kind of goes around the ringside. Found out later this is Shax, and this was her debut as well. Athena Fury wins with an electric chair drop because Shax, distracts. Shax distracts Barbie Rogue, and Fury takes advantage of the electric chair drop to become the first ever Pro Wrestling's Objective Women's Champion. Then there was an intermission, and I was able to sell my 82nd copy of my Fans Perspective books. That's pretty cool. That went to Tom Baker, a Brit Wrestle fan on Twitter. He runs the YouTube channel Talking Wrestling, and he's had Steve Valentino on there, and he's going to have an interview with Disciple coming this Friday.
Mm.
And he interviewed his favourite wrestler, Millie McKenzie, on the first show as well.
Yeah.
So big shout out to Tom.
Yeah, Disciple follows us on Twitter, so you could ask him.
Oh, yeah. Altalon is the masked Mexican wrestler, and he had an open challenge. It was answered by two dudes. I didn't quite get the names, but they really took it to him, but Altalon is just a beast. Usual suspects attacked Talon because Chris Drew was trying to get Talon to use a wrench, and he refused to do so. And then Chris Drew turns on Altalon and unites with the usual suspects, and that's a pretty good unit of a team, a stable, a group. Chris Drew's amazing on the microphone, and the usual suspects are, you know, brutish guys who can move and can attack and can fight and can brawl. So it'd be really interesting to see where they go from there. Chief Deputy Dunn, who the show was named after, versus TJ Sky, both men debuting on the undercard. Really good back and forth match. It was my match of the night up until that point. Dunn won with a springboard code breaker in the match of the night so far. It was a really good, strong debut for both men, and I hope to see them both back at the next show. And then the main event has been, I think it's been about 11 months in the making. Judge has been chasing the outlaw Jesse Jones, his Pro Wrestling's Objective Heavyweight Championship, for that long, and they finally met in a well, they met in other matches and stuff, but they finally met in, like, I guess the finale, the no DQ Dudley Street fight. And to start off the match, Judge spat in Jones's face, which just riled up the champion even more. And when it was all said and done, this was an unbelievable match. I said on Positive in Pro Wrestling, episode 2 last night, that this was a street fight with, you know, with the PG, you know, that had to be what it was. And it was good for the kids, good for the families. No, you know, no need to take them home early or anything like that. It was an unbelievable match, and it ended with a German suplex on chairs.
Ooh.
And it was crazy. And a rainmaker by Jones. But me and Tom, as I was talking about earlier, we were sitting together and we were watching it. And basically, the disciple comes out, and we're thinking, okay, that's going to be the element that allows the judge to take the title. So we're thinking, okay, well, Judge's going to win this now. And then to see Jesse Jones retain out of nowhere in the finest pro wrestling subjective match in history. I've only been to a number of shows, but I can't think of a match that's been better than this. Just an outstanding way to end the night, really. A good card with an out-of-this-world main event. And, yeah, fantastic. And you went to a show yourself, didn't you, Chris?
Yeah, me and my son went to Wrestle Island in Birkenhead. Oh, it was a really fun show. It opened with the Merseyside Murder Squad versus Friends of the Show, Sugar Dunkinson, and Defiant Wrestling star Imar Jordan. Polar opposite teams, and Murder Squad just were there to fight. It was Sugar and Spice, as they called themselves, were just there for fun. I think their entrance was longer than the actual match. They were just dancing the whole time. Since he's been in the UK, Sugar Dunkinson's kind of adopted the Sugar, honey, that one. As is, then it goes, you are our Dunkington.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, so it was a fun match. It was a lot of dancing. And yeah, but the Merseyside squad won the match in the end when Dan Evans pinned Sugar D. But then after the match, there's more dancing. Then
Mitch Sitchell, Danny Devine, who was unfortunately had to retire against Party Time Liam Perrin from a previous Pro Wrestling Subjectives show, when they were like dancing and stuff, when they had the conga, much like you've said with Wrestle Island then, and they were like dancing to all ranges of songs. I think one of them was Fun Match the Dirty Dancing, and the fans were in hysterics, as you can imagine.
Another friend of the show, Billy Norton, had an open challenge, which was answered by the leader of the Rejected. I think the name's... It's Demon with a I on the end, so it's Demoni. He never really said his name out loud. Turned into pretty much a lumberjack match, because the rest of the Rejected came out. There's another three members, and then the Student Union, another three members of them, who Billy's been feuding with for over a year, surrounded the ring. So most of the match was Billy just taking a beating. Then when Billy finally made the comeback and the chip, the fans were up high because he's such a fan favourite at Wrestle Island. Demoni just picked up a chair and started hitting him until he fell out the ring, and then all six people outside the ring started kicking him in. And then Team Mad made the save. And then there was a Fatal 4 women's match. It was Jade versus Lucy Sky versus Natalia Wilde versus Alexa Falcon. Unfortunately, I missed most of this match because Joel wanted to go to the merch table. But Alexi Falcon won the match again. She pinned Lucy Sky. At the merch table, that's where I met Sugar D, and we had a chat, and we took photos, and he said he'll come on the show again in March when he's finished his UK tour.
Oh, it's fantastic. He was a brilliant interview first time round.
Yeah.
Really cool guy.
Yeah, I got one of his T-shirts. It was the... You, it looks like, if you're from a distance, you'll think it's a New Japan T-shirt, but as you go in, it's Sugar D's face. In this New Japan style. They're cool.
Yeah, I saw that. It's a wicked T-shirt.
Me and Joel also got photos of Amir Jordan, and then Joel bought a Matt Sydal figure and a Rejected mask. Next up was pretty epic triple threat match between Martin Kirby, El Guerrero, and Terry Izzett. Terry Izzett reminds me of an early Miz, just a really cocky heel. Thinks everyone should love him. Doesn't know why, but the crowd boos him. We should all love him, but... in his head. It was a very fun match. There's a lot of comedy in it. Halfway through, Izzard got on the mat, said this is meant to be a triple threat, not a handicap match, because most of the match they're just kicking him in. But in the end, Terry Izzard got the win after El Guerrero tornado DDT'd Kirby, and then Izzard threw El Guerrero out the ring and stole the pin. Then we had Pitbull versus Hustle Malone. It was just two bruisers beating the crap out of each other for 5 minutes. Just fun match to watch. There must have been. I missed the last show, this must have been set up on the last show. I missed it, unfortunately. After the match, Pitbull.
Was the big hairy ginger bastard on the show?
No, he was on a Poor Jen show this weekend.
Oh, man. I love that name.
Oh, I actually found out what his real name is, but I can't think of what it is. Off the top of my head.
His real name, the one on his birth certificate, is Big Hairy Ginger Bastard. It is. Let's not beat around the bush.
Right, so, and then after the match, Pitbull announced that the owner of the company has let him be number 30 in the Rumble. Birkenhead's own Sean Only won the 30-man over Top Rope Battle Royal. He will now face Drew Parker for the Ireland Championship on 29th of April. The Iron Man was actually a woman of this Rumble. It was Jade, who entered number 2 and lasted over 50 minutes in the Rumble.
50 minutes?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, she eliminated...
Love Jade, that's amazing.
Yeah, number 1 was Drill. She eliminated Drill, who we're interviewing next week. She made it to the final four. She was like the fourth to last.
Nice segue there, Chris.
I really enjoy it. I look forward to doing Drill. I've not interviewed a proper heel before. So.
Yeah.
She did take a proper dig. She slapped him and he just decked her and she was out. And then number 3 came out. So, another friend of the show, Joe Nelson. He was also in this show, in this match. He looked really good. Not smaller than I thought he was going to be, but he was really good. A few other highlights. Martin Kirby did the Bushwhacker Luke spot from 1991, where he comes out. He did the full-on Bushwhacker walk straight into the ring, got thrown straight out, the Bushwhacker back out. And then when Sugar Dunkinson came out, he started a conga. They got all the crowd, all the refs, all the face wrestlers. Just did a conga to Gloria Estefan. I can't remember what song this is. But you can see the video up at top on our Twitter, and the tweet's been liked by Matt Riddle. So.
Oh, the King of Bros?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the progress introduction of him and David Starr?
No.
Oh, Chris, mate, you have to see it. It's fantastic. It's on my Twitter somewhere.
I'll have a look. It's an amazing family show. I can't wait till the one in April.
Yo, everybody in the UK, it's your boy, Shug D. I'm coming at you live in living color, surround sound, letting you know that there hasn't been this much mayhem since the Boston Tea Party. And I'm just letting you know that you're listening to Broken But Glorious.
Today's going to be a fun show. We're going to be announced the top 10 Cruiserweight Champions as voted for by our Twitter followers. Are you excited, Oliver, to find out?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the cruiserweights is the reason why, I switched over to WCW in the 90s. I know it was like the mid-card and the lower card and stuff, but the matches that Kidman, Mysterio, Psicosis, I mean, I don't know if you remember his name or anything, but Blitzkrieg was one of the wrestlers. I saw an amazing match with Supercalo and Rey Mysterio from way back when. The cruiserweights blew my mind, probably the reason why some of the, so-called smaller wrestlers are in the business. Daniel Bryan talked about the influence of Dean Malenko and Rey Mysterio. So, cruiserweights have always been exactly what I was looking for, a wrestling show. High flying or technical, I don't mind. They really bring the A-game to a wrestling ring, and it's fantastic to watch, and always has been.
But before we get into the top 10, since our last show, there has been a few big changes on 205 Live. So it's been reported that Vince has handed over the reins to Triple H, and which could explain the upturn in quality in the last 2 weeks. So firstly, Rockstar Spud has been appointed 205 Live GM. Your thoughts first on Drake Maverick, the name?
The name or the game? Sorry, that's the kind of thing that Nick does. You're here in spirit, Nick. Yeah, the name, it's a bad wrestle generator name.
Yeah, you said
that, didn't you, at the time. The name's not the be-all and end-all, is it, really? You know what I mean? Dolph Ziggler, back in the day, was like, why Dolph Ziggler? But
I understand why they do it, because they say if you change your name, then you can keep your pro wrestling t-store. That's why.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that was the case. But, you know, like I said, Dolph Ziggler, back in the day, you wouldn't think, oh, he's going to be a world champion based on his name. But based on his talent, he has been. So... Drake Maverick, the name isn't going to hold him back, really. We know Rockstar Spud and the whole crowd,
that's what they chanted the whole night.
Say that again, Chris, sorry.
The whole crowd is new, it was Rockstar Spud, because that's what they cheered. They chanted at him the whole night.
Yeah, exactly. So, much like Husky Harris becoming Bray Wyatt and stuff, it's not about the name. It's about the action, really. It's not about the talking, it's about the action. And since he's been general manager of 205 Live, there's definitely been an upturn. It has become must-watch. The in-ring action has been fantastic. To answer your question, before going on to anything else, to answer your question, I don't think the name matters. What do you think?
It's so American. I just don't like it. I'm sure it'll grow on me. I don't know. I'm so used to just he's going to be called Spud forever. So,
yeah.
He also announced a 16-man tournament to crown the new Cruiserweight champion. Said it's going to be a WrestleMania. Do you think it'll be at WrestleMania or on the pre-show of WrestleMania?
It's got to be on the main show at WrestleMania, hasn't it? They can't do this and then put it on the pre-show.
I'm skeptical.
It's a fantastic idea to make a tournament because obviously we'll get into this and stuff, but it is. Just like the Cruiserweight Classic, the presentation, everything about it, it screams Cruiserweight Classic. And that's why the fans at the time in 2016 were so behind the Cruiserweights. And it was only when that element seemed to have faded into the background that people turned on the show, the roster and, you know, the talent and the management. So if you had a kept it Cruiserweight Classic in ring, you wouldn't have had the... You wouldn't have had a problem on 205 Live, but they tried to make it Raw and SmackDown, and it shouldn't be. It should be a separate entity, much like NXT.
Yeah, the first round so far has been TJP defeated Tyler Bates, Cedric Alexander defeated Grandmas Halik, Kalisto defeated El Dorado, Lince Dorado, and Roderick Strong defeated Adomia Tommy. That was a bit of a shock, I thought, that one.
So, I had that down as a shock last night on the Positive in Pro Wrestling podcast.
So what are your thoughts on them bringing in non-205 Live stars like Strong and Bates into the tournament?
It's a great idea because Kota Ibushi was never signed, was he? And Zack Sabre Jr. wasn't for the Cruiserweight Classic. So it makes it like, wow, who are they going to bring in next? And then when we've talked about off air and stuff of possibly Leo Rush, and I've even said, you know, if you're going to do that, bring Ricochet into it. Just give the fans what they want. They want fast paced in ring action, high flying, technical wrestling, submission wrestling, everything rolled into one, because that's what Cruiserweights can do. They've been doing it since the '90s. They can still do it in 2018 because it's a new batch. And just let them go. That's all you need to do.
Yeah, tonight's show is Tozawa versus Mark Andrews, another debut. And then Tony Nese versus probably his best friend, Drew Gulak, which would be... They've been told to go serious, so it could be interesting if they...
I think if they are serious and they're given time, they'll tear the house down.
I'd be gutted if they got rid of the gimmick, because I like the counting of the eights. I do like the presentations and stuff. But
I think the best way to go for this match in particular is go serious or start off comedy and then comedic elements. Sorry, not necessarily comedy, but start off comedic elements, and then when they start throwing hands, then it gets serious.
Yeah.
And then they'll tear it up.
All right. So one more quick story before we get into the top ten. Platina Wrestling recently reported WWE are planning to air a special Latin American tournament on the network this summer. It's reported that wrestlers from the countries like Chile, Peru, Argentina, Mexico, Brazil, Puerto Rico will all be eligible to enter the tournament. And there's a good chance we'll see some old-fashioned, old favourites wheeled out for the early rounds. A few rumours going around Rey Mysterio, Savio Vega, Super Crazy, Juventud Guerrero, Chavo Guerrero Jr. and Kalisto?
Kalisto. He spits in the face of anybody who's not cool.
That's what we met him. He came at, before Wrestle Island was a thing. There was a shop called Mystery Island, and he used to just.
Is that still there?
No.
Oh wow, got it.
Yeah, but he used to just bring in wrestlers for like meet and greets and stuff, and we met Carlito there. So.
Was he cool?
He was cool.
That's good. Then.
My son was really excited to meet him. Got all these questions in his head, and then froze up as soon as he met him.
That's not cool.
Yeah. So I think if this tournament happens, I think it will do. They just haven't announced it officially yet because William Regal's been a bit cagey, saying it's possibly in the works but hasn't been finalised. Yeah. I think it'll be good for some of like the underutilised Latin talent like Kalisto, could bring in Sin Cara, Gran Metalik, Lance Dorado, just to name a few, and then possibly NXT's Cesar Bordoni.
Yes, Cesar Bononi, that's when he becomes the future star, isn't it?
Yeah.
By winning this tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, bring a couple of legends, a couple of people from your 205 Live who were legends in the Cruiserweight last year. Not last year, year before.
Year before. And I wrote about it in my book, Fans Perspective 2016, what a year to be a fan of WWE. Available on paperback and Kindle now.
The links will be in the book. Links will be in the description below the podcast.
Cheers,
Chris. So I've been quite interested in this one. I don't know where it will be held. I'm guessing it'll be in Mexico.
Okay, I'd hold it in the NXT Fall Sail again.
Possibly.
Yeah, I'd do it in Fall Sail, and then maybe the final, either on a pay-per-view, which would probably be a better idea, or in like a Mexico or Brazil or something.
Interesting if you did something similar to the WCPW World Cup where they had qualifiers in each country.
Yeah. Well, with the Cruiserweight Classic, they had qualifiers in Revolution Pro Wrestling. I think Progress was another one. There was a couple in America as well, so they had them like based over all over the place kind of thing. So, and it was amazing to see like Progress and Revolution Pro Wrestling on WWE's YouTube channel.
This is the UK's youngest pro wrestler, Joe Nelson, and you are listening to the Broken But Glorious podcast.
Right, so before we get into the top 10, quick history on the Cruiserweight Championship. So, in October 1991, Brian Pillman defeated Richard Morton in the final. Tournament finals to become their first WCW light heavyweight champion. WCW did not recognise the light heavyweight reigns as part of their cruiserweight history, but then WWE have revised it, so they do now. The title changed hand 5 times before Brad Armstrong vacated the title due to a knee injury in September 1992. The tournament was to decide a new champion was scheduled, but didn't occur until when, do you think?
Super Bowl.
Yeah, so it was vacated in 1992. The tournament to name a new champion happened in March 1996.
Okay. Well, you had to get ready for it, didn't they, Chris?
Yeah, and it was won by Shinjuro?
Shinjuro Itani.
Itani, I don't know much about him.
No, Japanese wrestling junior heavyweight legend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He defeated Wild Pegasus, who's known to the world as
Chris Benoit.
Yeah.
I wondered how long it would take us to mention that name on a podcast.
Half these questions I wrote for Nick. Because like, who's Wild Pegasus, Nick?
Oh, we miss you, Nick. Come back soon.
So he defeated Chris Benoit in the tournament finals at Thurman, the first ever WCW Cruiserweight Champion. This happened at a New Japan event. The title changed hands 49 times between March 96 and March 2001 when WWE bought WCW. Billy Kidman was the final WCW wrestler to hold the title before it was renamed and it was exclusively WWF.
Who did he beat at an invasion?
X-Pac?
Best in view, Chris.
Is it X-Pac? Was it? I can't remember. Is it X-Pac?
Yeah, I think it might be. I was thinking Tajiri.
It could have been Tajiri. I haven't got it written down.
So. Yeah, it's one or the other. We'll throw it out to the fans. Who did the Kidman beat at WWF Invasion 2001? Was it X-Pac or Tajiri?
Then in 2007, Hornswoggle surprisingly won a six-pack challenge, pinning Jamie Noble to win the title. A couple of weeks later, Vicky Guerrero stripped him of the title. And then in March 2008, the Cruiserweight title was considered abandoned when the WWE put it in the inactive titles on their website until TJ Perkins was awarded the title when he won the Cruiserweight Classic.
Yeah, I've got to say at this point now, Chris, I'm watching 2008, for research for my upcoming book about WrestleMania 24, mm-hmm. and I'm loving the Jamie Noble trying to get a girl storyline, and the fact that he's there's big wrestlers, and he's trying to prove himself against Batista and Kane and stuff to try and get the love and affection of women like Layla. He's so underrated as a character.
I didn't start watching again until 2010, so I kind of missed the whole Jamie Noble.
Well, you've got the network, Chris.
Yeah.
Look, it was amazing. I mean, one of the best experiences I had from WrestleMania 24, just to give the fans a little bit of an inkling to what the book's going to be about.
Mm.
Jamie Noble used other people's backs to stop himself from being eliminated from the pre-show Battle Royal.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic, that little element of not wanting to be eliminated. He got eliminated in the end, but, in that moment it was fantastic. And then on the minus side, for reasons unknown to me, my favourite modern-day wrestler, Paul London, was nowhere on the show, not even in the pre-show Battle Royal.
Oh.
I know, I was gutted. He was on Raw the next night, I was there too.
Alright, so just a few stats. So the most reigns is Jay Mysterio, that's what my son calls himself on wrestling games. Jay Mysterio. Rey Mysterio with eight reigns.
Extreme Warfare Revenge.
Sorry, never played it.
Oh, it's quality. It's a management wrestling game, Chris, made by Adam Roiland.
Longest single reign is Gregory Helms, 385 days. Longest combined reign, Gregory Helms, 532 days. And then the shortest reign was Jimmy Wang Yang, a few minutes, it says here. Doesn't say exactly.
Jimmy Wang Yang's boy!
Sup guys, it is the leader of the Billy Club, Billy Known, and you are listening to Broken But Glorious.
Alright, so we get to the top 10. So number 10, voted for by our Twitter followers. Should we do it? I'll tell you how we came up with the top 10. So, just a bit of background. How we came up with our top 20. I did some very complicated maths, which we can't go into, to come up with a top 20 champions.
That'll take us to the hour and 18 minutes that me and Steve Valentino had for the interview.
Yeah, so using some very complicated maths, I whittled down every Cruiserweight champion to a top 20, which then I put to our Twitter followers to whittle down to the top 10 by voting in a series of polls, which we called Fatal 4-Ways, over 5 days, so each wrestler had 5 Fatal 4-Ways, and then they were seeded each day due to number of reigns, total combined reigns, longest reign. The first day was just a random draw, and the last day was average reign. So they were seeded towards that. I awarded 3 points for a winner and 1 point for coming second. And then, we've got our top 10. So number 10.
Imagine if these 4-way matches actually had took place, though, Chris.
Oh, some of them would have been amazing, yeah.
They would have been incredible, wouldn't they?
Yeah, we did cheat a little bit because the artist and Nunzio got into the top 20. But I thought
and they weren't included, Chris.
I thought Psychosis and Justin Thunderliger had more of a influence on Cruiserweight wrestling than the artist. The artist
Nunzio is going to be absolutely so angry if you're right there.
Probably Clay, in case somebody somehow does the same maths as me and comes with a different top 20. That's what we did. So.
We did. I voted in it, so I remember how it went. Well, I don't know how the final top 10 was, and that's going to be a surprise to me when you release the information in moments to come.
Yep.
But I voted as we went along until the fifth and final voting stage.
Yeah. Right, so and number 10 was Chavo Guerrero, who was a six-time champion, holding the title for a combined 431 days. His longest reign was 154 days.
Right.
So your memories of Chavo?
I'm not sure if it was like the cruiserweight title and stuff, but just the peppy stuff in WCW and, you know, Eddie and Chavo's feud and him having to shave his head. I think he shaved his head. From a cruiserweight perspective, he was one of the... everyone was a high flyer and he was like the technical wrestler. Mm. So that drew me to him. Just a really, really good wrestler. Can do it all in the ring, really. And the cruiserweight title when he was with his father, Chavo Guerrero Sr., he really picked it up a notch as the cruiserweight champion. That was amazing viewing, really. He was brilliant.
Yeah, so he actually won his first title under the name Lieutenant Loco when he was a member of the Misfits in Action.
Misfits in Action. Yeah, WCW. And G.I. Bro, do you know who that was?
Nails, Booker T. You're not allowed to mention that around him. he famously lost it to Jacqueline before winning it back 12 days before losing it to his dad.
Yeah, I remember Jacqueline winning the title. That's another instance of gender barriers being broken down, isn't it? And a really big reason why she was in the Hall of Fame last year.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think she was watching.
Whenever it was in Texas, was that last year?
Texas.
So Dallas, was that
last
year?
No, that was 2016 then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
All right, so, and you can read about that WrestleMania in my book. I'm not going to say the title then, where you can get it again. You know that stuff already.
Right, so I think Chavo is just a damn fine cruiserweight title matches over the years. Particularly his matches with Rey Mysterio were particularly good.
I think I remember a great match with no bias involved here, but my modern favourite wrestler, Paul London. Yeah. I think he had a fantastic match with him. I want to say like a Judgment Day or something.
Mm.
I can't pinpoint the actual show and stuff, but I remember I had a great match with him. And I remember Kidman and Chavo attacked London. And then for all the people who said that, his talking wasn't really up to par, he did a bloody promo interview that was like only released on WWE.com or whatever. And that was proof to me that he could. And obviously from stuff he did in Ring of Honor when he was campaigning to be AJ Styles, his tag team partner way back when, Paul London could talk. He just wasn't given the opportunity to do so, really. And it was disappointing because that really halted his progress in WWE.
Right, so number 9 has a unique claim to his name. He held the WWE title, or WWF title, 18 years before he made his WWE debut.
Wow.
So it's Justin Funderlager.
Okay.
So when...
The man with the greatest, one of the greatest theme songs in pro wrestling history. It's worth watching any Justin Funderlager match just to hear the theme song, and then when you add into it, he's a legend and fantastic in the ring. It's amazing.
Yeah, I don't think he got voted on this list for his time with the title because he only held it once for 66 days. But just as a cruiserweight legend, I think he got into this list.
So, I think one of our listeners commented on it and said that he was on loan from New Japan Pro Wrestling to World Championship Wrestling for a short amount of time, and that's why his cruiserweight title reign wasn't that long, because he went back to New Japan.
Yeah, so just going back to if somebody's wondering how he held a WWE title 18 years before making a WWE debut, when he won the J Crown in 1997, the WWF Light Heavyweight Championship was put part of that unified title. So he won that in 1997, but didn't make his debut until he faced Tyler Breeze at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 2015.
Very good. And who else, what other promotion has Justin Funderlager been a part of? American promotion?
TNA?
Yeah, Impact Wrestling. He was on a
pre-show at Bound for Glory against the Samoan Submission Machine, Samoa Joe. So.
Yeah, so as I said, he's only held the title once for 6 days, so he's an extremely accomplished wrestler from Japan. Throughout his career, he's held over 20 titles in New Japan Pro Wrestling, as well as a swill of other titles around the world.
And we should mention at this point, Chris, he's going to go up against Rey Mysterio in a first-time ever match at New Japan.
You got a copy of my thing, that's the next thing on my list. Yeah, so
no, I just keep up with the rest of the news, Chris. It's all part of the job.
Yeah, so he's currently 53 years old.
Wow.
But because of his costume, as long as he keeps in decent shape, you can't really tell how old he is. So. I know he's a bit slower than he used to be, but he can still get around the ring as well as any.
Well, you go up to him and say he's a bit slower than he used to be and see if he gives you a nice vicious palm strike to the face.
It's quite obvious if you go watch 1996 Justin Liger and then you watch now Justin Liger, he's still as good, but he's not as quick. So.
Yeah. Still, palm strikes.
Right, so number 8 was X-Pac or 6, who was a 2-time champion holding the titles for a combined 196 days, as long as Reign being 125 days. So, he's a 1-time champion in both WWE and WCW for the title. X-Pac is the one and only man to hold both the light heavyweight and cruiserweight titles at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he, you know, he was critical in, early WWF days, wrestling against Ramon, and that debut and that upset is one of the biggest moments in Raw history and probably in pro wrestling history. From a light heavyweight perspective, I think he held that title during his group with just Incredible and, I want to say, Albert, A-Train.
Yeah.
X-Factor.
X-Factor, the best, worst theme tune of all time.
Tell again, sorry, Chris.
The best, worst theme tune of all time.
Yeah, and from the WCW light WCW cruiserweight perspective, I'm going to take a little bit of a stab in the dark, but wasn't that him against Eddie Guerrero in a ladder match at NWO Sold Out?
That was for the US title, pretty sure.
Oh, okay. So his reign as of this moment in time, I'm not entirely familiar with, but his impact on cruiserweight wrestling, going back to his matches as a Lightning Kid against Jerry Lynn from way back when, he's a pioneer of cruiserweight wrestling, isn't he?
Yeah.
So the reigns, are not common to me at this moment in time, but his status and what he's done for professional wrestling and light heavyweights and cruiserweights is, it's there for all to see, really.
Yeah, he also went on to win tag team titles with multiple partners
and
the European title.
Yeah.
Alright, number 7 was the Gregory Helmstroke, the Hurricane. So yeah,
and Sugar Shane.
And Shane, yeah.
No, yeah, Sugar Shane as well from the later days of WCW.
I think he wants to forget about Three Count.
I really enjoyed them. I must be in the minority, but I thought they were wicked. Especially when Tank Abbott was involved.
No.
That was really fun. I know it's like stupid throwaway stuff, but it was still a lot of fun. But in terms of Gregory and Sugar Shane Helms and stuff for the cruiserweight division in WCW, when it got the reboot, he was, a critical part of the cruiserweight kind of revolution in WCW with Three Count against the Young Dragons. I remember matches between them, and then he was the last cruiserweight champion, wasn't he? In WCW, and obviously lost it to Kidman in WWF at the time.
Mm.
The Hurricane character, he's got a pinfall victory over The Rock. I know it was by Steve Austin distracting The Rock, but that's amazing. And the little story they built up there was incredible. And then when he was Gregory Helms and he held the cruiserweight title in like mid-noughties of WWE, Yeah, he had a really good reign, and I mixed it up with different people and had to come out of, like, I think, six-pack challenges and things of that nature. He might have had a match against Paul London that I remember thinking I saw, but as of this moment at 7 minutes past 11 at night, it's a little bit foggy. Just everything that he's done, the Mighty Molly stuff with Molly Holly as well, and yeah, just a once again another pioneer in cruiserweight wrestling that took that and used it as a springboard to launch his career, which is what 205 Live should be doing nowadays.
Yeah, at the beginning of his 365-day reign, he defended his title on pay-per-view against everyone from Jimmy Wang Yang to Super Crazy, but he also had a couple of matches like Champions vs. Champions against World Heavyweight Champion Rey Mysterio, and then US title Chris Benoit.
Yeah, well, like I said, he can mix it up with anyone. He's got a fantastic character, cocky as Gregory and Sugar Shane.
I'd love him to be one of the guys who's in this tournament.
Maybe a
surprise entrance in this tournament could be fun. In the 205 Live.
Yeah.
The pop he got at the Royal Rumble's amazing, even though it was only in for seconds. But.
Oh, well, absolutely. And then obviously the Hurricane is, from a character perspective and the comedy aspect of it. Remember when he was the reporter and he was the Hurricane? Two separate characters. That was fantastic as well. The feud he had with Jamie Noble's just come to me, which was brilliant, including a great match at one of the pay-per-views. I think it was like a June pay-per-view. It might have been King of the Ring 2002, I'd go with. So used it as a springboard. And like I said, with 205 Live, just going back to a second, obviously Neville's kind of in limbo at the moment, but he really should have gone from cruiserweight title, lost the cruiserweight title, and ended up on Raw and SmackDown going for the US or the Intercontinental title. And I hope that's what happens when it's all said and done with his, the current dispute that's going on.
Right, and then number six was Dean Malenko, who's a four-time champion, holding the title for a combined 188 days. His longest reign was 67 days. He kind of made a big start in ECW. He captured the TV title and the tag team titles before he was noticed by WCW and brought in as part of the Cruiserweight title. He remains one of the best all-round in-ring technicians in fans' minds. And he's
Absolutely. I mean, his matches with Eddie Guerrero in ECW have gone down in history as basically the blueprint of what a great wrestling match should be. I remember Backlash 2000, I believe, his match with Scotty Tuhati was out of this world. That was the only opportunity he really had in WWF at the time. They almost stole the show, in all honesty. I remember it being as such. Was it 2001? Sorry. Because Rock Austin was the Backlash main event, wasn't it? So, Scotty Tuhati against Dean Malenko for the WWF light heavyweight title. Yeah, if you haven't seen it, go and watch it. Especially the ending of the match was quite crazy, really.
Yeah, he was unlike other cruiserweights because he wasn't about high-risk spots or theatrics. He was the man of 1,001 holds.
And then he met Chris Jericho, who was the man of 1,005 holds. And yeah, obviously their feud's gone down in cruiserweight history.
Yeah, we'll discuss that more at Chris Jericho. But
Malenko is cut from the same cloth as Chavo Guerrero in terms of technique, isn't he? Obviously, probably a level up in terms of technical wrestling. Malenko was, you know, hold for hold, submission for submission, whereas Guerrero was more about technique and stuff. So Malenko is, you know, was one of my favourite wrestlers when I was following WCW. Any time he'd come out, I just loved the fact that he was no nonsense. They called him the Iceman for a reason, because he was ice cold in the ring and he just destroyed his opponents and took them down, went after limbs, joints, and tried to get submission victories with his Texas Cloverleaf finishing submission move.
Yeah, he also was number one in the PW 500 in 1997.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
Right, number five was Tajiri. He won the title three times, holding it for combined 283 time, days. Longest reign was 162. So before he got to WWE, he was part of ECW and he won the television title, television and tag team titles. He's got a couple of firsts. So he was recognised as the first WWF Cruiserweight title.
And he had an amazing series of matches against Super Crazy in ECW.
Yeah.
And he was the tag team champion with Mikey Whipwreck, and they were managed by the Sinister Minister, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He looked so crazy in WCW.
Yeah.
No, ECW, sorry. So and then when the World Wildlife Fund defeated Vince McMahon in court for the initials WWF, this year he came recognised as the first WWE Cruiserweight Champion. His final reign came in September 2003 when he defeated Trey Mysterio. Throughout his career, he would win a total of 8 championships, including tag team gold with Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero. He left the company in 2005 to go to Japan and can be seen in Smash Promotions. He made a return in the Cruiserweight Classic in 2016. I can't remember who he beat. He got to the second round, I think. Didn't he?
Was it Damien Slayer, maybe?
Yeah, he definitely won his first round match, and then
first round match, and he was actually part of the 205 Live roster until he got injured, and then they had to let him go because of his age as much as anything else. Did he not win the tag team titles with William Regal?
Yeah, William Regal and Eddie Guerrero got the win down here.
Oh, okay, because you said, William? No, you didn't say William Regal, you said Eddie Guerrero and, must have missed that part.
It's number 4 is Neville, 2-time champion, combined 232 days, longest reign 197. Should have only been at one time. He shouldn't have lost it to the Zawa. There was no point.
It was just bad news, wasn't it? Really?
He defeated Rich Swann to capture the Cruiserweight Championship for the first time. Then he defeated Jack Gallagher at Fastlane in Austin Aries at WrestleMania. And then lost it to Enzo Amore. Neville's the best character they've had all last year, and he just kept messing it up.
Yeah, that's true. He carried the 205 Live roster and the Cruiserweight title on his back, and he did a fantastic job, didn't he?
Mm.
And like I said, this should be the springboard for him to be on Raw and SmackDown Live, tearing it up.
Yeah.
And obviously he's in limbo at the moment, and I want that to be sorted out, and I want him to be back on our TV screens, sooner rather than later, because he's done a fantastic job with the Cruiserweight title, but it shouldn't be the, it should be like option C in Impact Wrestling. You should have that option to move up to the IC title or the US title, and that's what they definitely need to do with Neville if he comes back from this dispute.
Yeah, I'd love a Neville versus Miz match. It would be amazing, I think.
Yeah, Neville versus Bobby Roode would be amazing as well, wouldn't it?
Mm.
So.
Yeah, so come back, me and Neville. We miss you.
Yeah, we miss you a lot.
Number 3, Eddie Guerrero, 2-time champion.
Latino Heat.
Two-time champion, combined reign 91 days, longest reign 49 days.
It's 4 pages of notes, people.
That was at 12 o'clock. I've got 6 pages of notes now. Alright, so Eddie was only part of the Cruiserweight division, really, between August and December 1997. He was mainly part of the US title scene. But a few months they were amazing. So after losing the US title, Guerrero feuded with Jericho, focusing on the Cruiserweight title. He challenged Jericho for the title at Clash of Champions, but lost. He then demanded a rematch for the title in the opening of the 4 Brawl. Guerrero defeated Jericho for the title. He then dropped it to Rey Mysterio.
In a match that Chris Jericho and Eddie Guerrero were kind of wrestling for themselves, because the crowd, for some reason, were sitting on their hands.
Yeah.
Even though the match in front of them was a masterpiece.
Yeah.
And Chris Jericho said about it in his books.
Yeah, I think a lot of them early WCW, they used to just let people in or pay people to go be in the crowd, I've heard. Yeah, so he then dropped the title to Rey Mysterio at Halloween Havoc in a title versus mask match.
One of the greatest Cruiserweight matches of all time, and quite possibly the best WCW match in history.
Then,
that was just incredible.
Then on an episode of Nitro in November, he regained the championship from Guerrero and then made a successful defence of the title against Guerrero at World War III. Then after retaining the title against Dean Malenko in the open bout at Starrcade in 97, Guerrero dropped his Ultimo Dragon the following day on December 29th for Raw. That was the last time he held the title. But just then, that's it. What an amazing couple of months.
Amazing couple of months, an amazing bunch of opponents, wasn't it, really?
Yeah.
And those matches, I think everyone you're talking about is like a legend in professional wrestling, and definitely in the cruiserweight wrestling side of things. So yeah, if you was a fan of WCW and you're a fan of cruiserweight wrestling, none of those matches, all those matches you need to be watching. You need to watch.
Yeah, he sadly passed away in November 2005.
Yeah, I was at Universal Uproar the day before, and unfortunately came back on the 13th of November. I remember it clear as day, and heard that one of my childhood heroes, Eddie Guerrero, had passed away, and he's still sorely missed to this day.
Yeah. Right, number two was Chris Jericho, who was a four-time champion. Holding it for a combined 231 days. His longest reign was 113 days.
This is when Chris Jericho came into his own, though, isn't it, really, as a character?
Yeah.
On WCW TV, his matches and his feud against Dean Malenko are legendary. His matches against Rey Mysterio as well. Juventud Guerrero, because he wanted to unmask him.
Yeah.
He just used this. This was his opportunity. He came in as a hero and really didn't like the experience. And then when he had the opportunity to take the reins as a villain, he really excelled. And this is exactly what I'm saying about 205 Live. Chris Jericho worked with the Cruiserweight title, and then it springboarded him. And now look at him. He's a legend in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought we should do. Jericho made the Cruiserweight title. The Cruiserweight title didn't make Chris Jericho.
His Cruiserweight Championship tenure was mainly remembered for his feud with Dean Malenko. So it kind of started when Jericho was claiming that he was better than Malenko in the ring, but he kept refusing to fight him. And then, as you said, he went on to announce that he knew four more holds. At Uncensored, Jericho defeated Malenko in a good match and defended the title, causing Malenko to leave the WCW due to frustration. In a promo in March on Nitro, he proceeded to tell us all 1,004 holds he knew. It's one of the best promos ever.
The moss covered, three handled family grandunzel.
Why doesn't he just mail us this list and we'll announce it?
Bar.
He's just ranting.
Number five, the Saskatchewan spinning nerve hole.
This must be meathead microphone night. You think so?
Bar.
He's got 998 to
number
go.
Nine,
get the hook, we're out of here.
Shut
up. Get a
haircut. Number 10, right handed.
Yeah, every other move on the list was an armbar. So.
Yeah. There's a thousand variations of an armbar. Oh, you're a wrestling fan. I'm a wrestling fan, Chris. You should know this.
we know what a legendary career he's had ever since. So, number
Absolutely.
One. And we're all hoping
number
it's...
Number one is
Enzo Amore?
No.
Number one, Rey Mysterio. Who was an eight-time champion, holding it combined 486 days. His longest reign was 115 days. So Mysterio started his career at AAA promotion in Mexico. And he got national exposure when he was hired by Paul Heyman to work in WCW.
He was part of the Worlds Collide pay-per-view as well. Chris, that's where he got noticed.
Mysterio would only last a year, but having memorable feuds of Psychosis and Juventud Guerrero. He was signed up by WCW, and he stayed with the company until they were bought out by WWF. So have you got any favourite memories of Mysterio?
Oh, absolutely. you know, we've talked about with Eddie Guerrero, that Halloween Havoc match is a cruiserweight blueprint, and in terms of a wrestling match, if people want to know how to engage the crowd and how to give them a match that leaves them breathless, they need to be watching that and kind of learning and living from it. I would imagine that the three 17-year-old British wrestlers that you talk about, JJ Barker, Joe Nelson, and Billy Norton, the reason why they're a fan of Rey Mysterio is probably because of that match. That was fantastic. And, you know, like I said, he had a great feud against Chris Jericho. He's basically every time Mysterio went into a match, he had an amazing match at World War III against Ultimo Dragon, who I'm absolutely shocked to the core isn't in the top 10 because he's one of the most important cruiserweights of all time, in all honesty. But bringing it back to Mysterio. And then, he had the cruiserweight title feud with Mattitude, Matt Hardy. And they had a pretty good match at WrestleMania.
Okay, he only lost out on the top 10 by average percentage of the poll. Him and Chavo had the same points.
Oh, okay. And then on SmackDown, they had the main event in there between Matt Hardy and Rey Mysterio. That was the first main event that the Cruiserweight title was in.
Mm.
And that was fantastic. And then once again, the Mysterio worked with the Cruiserweight title and, you know, he brought it up and then moved on from that and was a part of, you know, there was a great match at WWE No Mercy 2002 with Mysterio and Edge against Kurt Angle and, as we've already mentioned, him, Chris Benoit, in one of the greatest tag team matches you'll probably ever see. He was part of the SmackDown 6 along with Edge, Benoit, Angle, Brock Lesnar,
both Guerreros, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Eddie Guerrero as well. So, and that was when Heyman was running SmackDown and Bischoff was running Raw, and it was really, really interesting to see which show would be better than the other one. And 9 times out of 10, it was SmackDown, which the WWE for some reason didn't like because Raw's the so-called flagship show. Mysterio has, has been amazing in WWE. He won the 2006 Royal Rumble, won the World Heavyweight title at WrestleMania 21?
I'm not sure. It's going to be 22.
And he fought Eddie Guerrero in a fantastic feud in 2005. And then obviously, as of current day, Rey Mysterio is still wrestling. He was a part of the Royal Rumble as
It's the first time I've seen him wrestle without a shirt for years.
Yeah, the best surprise of the Royal Rumble. It's had the most views on YouTube. And now he's a big part of the 5-star wrestling UK arena tour that's happening at the moment. Mm. And he's live on Free Sports on a Thursday night here in the UK. So, yeah, Mysterio is probably the greatest cruiserweight in the history of professional wrestling and well-deserving of number one.
Yeah, and as you said, he's also challenged Justin von der Liger to a match at New Japan Pro Wrestling's Big Strong style event at Long Beach, California, on March 25th. So that should be an amazing match. So what did you think of the top 10 overall?
Well, it's without Paul London, so that's disappointing. It's without Ultimo Dragon. I know we've just briefly spoke about it. I can't believe he's not part of the top 10 because when you talk about the J Crown, you talk about Ultimo Dragon. He's actually been on like WWE events with 10 titles around his arms, waist, his neck.
It's amazing.
You can imagine. So,
it's an amazing sight, that one where he's got all the... That was the 9 titles he's got, the 8th, and then the WCW one as well. Looks amazing.
It's something along those lines, isn't it? So
Billy Kidman didn't make top 10, even though he's a 7-time champion.
Who's that?
Billy Kidman.
Yeah, Billy Kidman, when, all the things that he did when he was in the Flock, when he was with Torrey Wilson, and obviously in WWE, one of my favourite Paul London matches was against Billy Kidman from No Mercy 2004. I love the fact that Kidman was using the shooting star press to injure people. I thought that was quite a cool character thing. So, yeah, that's an interesting one as well. But like you said, the top 20 cruiserweights from the list that we compiled, you know, there isn't much difference between the top 10 is there really in the top 20.
No.
When you think about it, you can make an argument for anyone.
Some people might have expected Psychosis to get in, but despite him doing great things for cruiserweight wrestling, he didn't really do much of the title. I think he had two reigns, which lost to the Goodbye the Week.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I think the top 10 is how it should be. Like I said, I'm obviously probably biased about Paul London. I thought his cruiserweight title run was really good in WWE. Mm. And obviously he was tag team champions with Brian Kendrick as well. So I think when we're looking at the cruiserweights, one of the things we should have done, I guess we are kind of doing in the podcast, is talking about the legacy of the cruiserweight title for that individual.
Yeah.
And where did they go from there? So, you know, Rey Mysterio has made the cruiserweight title and then gone on to become a legend because of his time with the cruiserweight title and how he'd set him up in professional wrestling. So, you know, Ultimo Dragon was, you know, fantastic in Japan, and then WCW and then held all these titles, the J Crown, as we've said. You know, and it's just like that, really. I think it's the legacy of cruiserweight wrestling is how did that cruiserweight then do when mixing up with heavyweights. And, you know, Jericho did well, Mysterio did well, Eddie Guerrero did well, Gregory Helms, Hurricane, Sugar Shane obviously went up against The Rock, so that's four out of the top 10. I might be missing something. I'm sure you could make an argument for at least five out of the top 10 have been around the cruiserweight title, and it's been a catalyst and a catapult to a legendary career.
So if you want to see the full results of the Fatal 4-Way polls, you can head over to our Twitter, it's BBGWPod, and then click on the moments. I think it's called Cruiserweight Tournament. That's a huge thanks for listening, and we'll see you again for our review of Elimination Chamber. Good night.
Good night, everyone, and get well soon, Nick.
Yeah.